particularly in the Pennines and into southern Scotland. That will could cause some minor flooding on some roads as we head into the evening rush hour. The northern half of Scotland, though, compared with recent days, a cool, cloudy, misty day, some occasional rain, a little bit of brightness here and there, best of which in Shetland. Only 6 degrees here, 8 to 10 elsewhere, but the cold weather in Shetland will gradually push its way southwards after a cloudy and wet day on Thursday, brighter for Friday and the weekend, but a little bit chilly, I'm afraid.
It's still saddening. It's okay. We like a bit of sunshine. We can have a bit of variety. Thanks, Matt. Very good night to you. Matt Taylor there at the BBC Weather Centre. Now on Radio 4, we continue our Book of the Week, The Valley by Richard Benson. We resume the story of the author's grandmother, Winnie Parkin, whose adolescence had been dominated by the violent temper of her war-damaged father. Now on a summer's evening in 1929, at the urging of her boss's daughter, Winnie is about to attend her first dance. The reader is Richard Stacy.
It's a lovely day tomorrow. Tomorrow is a lovely day. Come and feast your tear-dimmed eyes on tomorrow's clear blue skies.
For a year, Miss Marjorie has been urging Winnie to get her nose out of her historical romances and to stop bothering so much with spirits and to get off dancing. Until now, she's put it off. Winnie prefers going to the pictures, attracted by the cinema's warm, exotic interior. Most of all, she likes Rudolph Valentino, who seems to her the acme of modern manhood. When he died unexpectedly in August 1926, she felt bereft, as if a world without Rudolph was one in which she could love no man at all. The next year, her sister, Millie, announced her engagement to Danny Lannis, a miner and bantamweight boxer from Goldthorpe. Millie is a year younger than Winnie, and Winnie knows that eldest daughters have to be careful because when the younger ones marry quickly, they end up stuck at home, looking after their parents. This is why, the next time Miss Marjorie brought up the subject of dancing, Winnie said, "Would you show me how to do that makeup again?" Millie, who likes dances, suggested the one at the Miners' Welfare Hall because she was on the bill. She performs with a young amateur singer-comedian from Bolton-upon-Dern known as the Juggler, and he'd asked her to do a couple of songs with him in the band. "You'll have to come and meet him," she told Winnie. "He's a good sport, but he's daft as a brush." When they pushed through the heavy swing doors, the music and the faintly sickly smell hit them like a wall. The men are wearing gangster suits and pointed shoes, and some of the younger ones have an almost sinister look with centre-parted, slicked-down hair and eyes emphasised by the deliberate leaving on of coal dust on the rims. The younger women have bobbed hair and deep red lips, low-waist dresses and bare legs. Winnie looks at the band, her eyes searching for Millie. When she sees her sisters not yet on stage, she and Mabel sit down at the side. When a foxtrot begins, a man comes over and asks Mabel to dance. Winnie sits alone, looking at the band and the other women in their frocks. The man brings Mabel back, and a second man, his friend, takes Winnie off to dance. He feels hot and smells of shaving soap, and he holds her too tight and pushes himself against her. The girls at work talk about this sort of thing. It's exactly what she'd worried about. A few songs into the second part of the evening, the singer steps up to the microphone and introduces a young local pair, and I hope you'll give him a right warm welcome. Ladies and gentlemen, Millie Parkin and Harry Hollingworth, also known as the Juggler. Millie is standing in the spotlight with a younger man who has slicked back centre-parted hair and is dressed in a wide-legged gangster suit. He's tall and broad-shouldered, but his facial features look as if they could belong to various comic cartoon characters. His pale brown eyes are heavily lidded and topped by heavy, dark eyebrows that make him appear sleepy. Sticking out like giant handles, his ears seem too large for his head. His forehead is high, accentuating his height. When he opens his mouth to smile, he reveals a wide gap where his upper front teeth are missing. kicked out by a pit pony, Millie tells Winnie later on. Millie makes a joke about his looks and he frowns theatrically. Then the band starts Home in Pasadena and Juggler steps forward. The voice that comes out of the strange face is a tenor as sweet, rich and strong as the sponge at the bottom of a sherry trifle. When Millie's voice comes in, mixing with his, Winnie thinks they sound wonderful, like singers you might hear on the radio. And as she watches, she finds that although she feels thrilled and impressed by her younger sister, she cannot keep her eyes from drifting back to the gaping grin and heavy-lidded eyes of the juggler. Afterwards, Millie brings him over to meet Winnie and Mabel, and a crowd gathers round them, cracking jokes and catching at the juggler's elbow. Soon, though, Millie is tugged away by some girls, and when Winnie looks for Mabel, she isn't there. But then, suddenly, somehow, the juggler is there, looking directly at her, and she feels paralysed and unable to speak. "Now then, love, are they not talking to you?" he asks. "Cocky so-and-so," she thinks. She laughs, self-consciously. "I thought you'd be talking to our Millie about your singing." "I've talked to Millie," he says. "Well, she's talked to me, any road." He affects weariness. "You and Millie's alas a few words, but she don't stint in using them." Winnie laughs. "There's a right dancer, though," he says. "I've been watching thee." "You never have." She notices how pink and clean he looks. "I enjoyed it," she half lies. "I thought our Millie was super, didn't you?" Winnie thinks super is a classy and up-to-date word. "That's 'cause she's had a rate trainer."
"Has she? Who?"
"Me." Winnie makes a show of stifling a laugh. He asks if he can walk her home. Winnie accepts on the proviso that Mabel comes too. The three of them go halfway together and then Mabel breaks off for her street. The juggler cracks jokes all the way home. He mentions working as a miner and says that he knows Walter Parkin. He tells her he's learning how to play the drums by practicing on his mother's sideboard, kicking the cupboard for the bass drum. When Winnie laughs, he says it isn't a joke. He's playing in Mexborough the next night, he says, but why doesn't she come out with him the night after to the pictures? She says yes. At the end of the street, they pause. "Right," says juggler, "I'll see thee." He leans in to kiss her, but she pulls back. "Oh, come on," he says. "Gi's a right kiss." "I have to go home," she says, and walks away, her heart beating hard and fast down in her whalebone and elastic. The day after the dance, Millie tells the Parkins juggler's story. He's 19, from a family that has for generations beyond memory lived in Bolton-upon-Dearne. The eldest sons are always known as Juggler, the nickname going back to Harry's great-great-great-great-grandfather, a smallholder who performed juggling and trapeze acts in a circus. The trapeze work died with him, but the eldest sons and grandsons had all supplemented their farm labouring and coal mining incomes with juggling, singing, telling jokes, and playing the concertina in music halls and pubs. Since he was 14, Juggler has worked as a miner, but as the wages do not meet his cravings for motorcycles, gramophones and gangster suits, he's pursued a sideline career in music. If Winnie had imagined the man she would marry, it would surely not have been a man like this, a comic and a live wire so different to herself, and yet she likes him. She likes being with someone who is well-dressed and who knows all the other men in the pub, and she likes the daftness that is in such contrast to her disciplined home. He is keen. Too keen, she thinks, and she breaks it off. Harry, he's told her to call him that, said he don't care. But her sudden withdrawal piques his interest. In the meantime, a young man from the chapel, Ernest Sutcliffe, who works at Highgate Pit asks if Winnie would like to go out for a Sunday walk, and she accepts. They visit the cinema. They go for more walks. Millie says that Harry is asking why she don't come out, and that Ernest is a wet blanket. A spring night in 1930, after a visit to the Empire Cinema, Ernest buys Winnie a bag of chips which they eat from the newspaper while walking towards the Parkins home. Suddenly, as they step from under a railway bridge, a man jumps from the bank beside them, stumbles on the path and lunges at Ernest. Winnie squeals. Ernest pushes the man away, and the figure reels back before gathering himself and coming at Ernest again.
"Harry," says Winnie. "Harry, what are you doing?"
"I've come to teach him to leave thee alone." Winnie notices something in his right hand.
"Get on with you, juggler," laughs Ernest.
"What's that thing in your hand?" says Winnie.
"That's a knuckle duster," says Ernest.
"You can't use a knuckle duster, can you?"
"Yes, I can," says Harry. But Ernest looks unconvinced. Harry's hand drops to his side.
"Shut that cake hole."
Ernest shakes his head.
What do you want to go in for?" says Harry. "He's nowt. I love you."
"It looks like it, hiding under bridges with that thing on your hand," says Winnie.
But she's not put off.
All her life, Winnie will crave romantic love and toughness. She will try to fill herself with the sentiment of romances and greetings cards, but what she loves is open declarations. Possibly now, even accompanied by a knuckle duster under a railway bridge, she falls for it.
"You lying swine, Ollingworth," says Ernest, and pushes Juggler in the chest. Harry inexpertly swings the arm with a knuckle duster up into Ernest's jaw. It cuts the skin, and blood runs down into his white muffler.
"Oh, well, sorry, cock," says Harry.
Winnie tells him to stop, and the fight peters out.
"Just leave me alone, you maniac," says Ernest, holding his bleeding face and retreating.
"He's not a man," Harry informs Winnie. "You do as you like, but I love you." And turns and walks down the street. Winnie stays away from Harry for a while, but he pursues her, asking her out, sending her messages via Millie. And she comes round. Within months, they are courting properly. And one evening, Harry suggests they go for a walk. Walk being Harry's code for sex. When Winnie tells this story to her daughters and then her granddaughter many years after, she does not go into detail, saying only that he did something he shouldn't. Later, Harry says that as she could now be pregnant, they should get married. She seems to have been so unsure of the likelihood or otherwise of actually becoming pregnant, and so deprived of the vocabulary and language to talk about the situation, that she agrees. She tells Annie, and then her father, that she is pregnant, and Harry comes to the house to discuss his and Winnie's marriage. Walter rages, but his initial anger subsides into a desire to protect his daughter. However much she forgives her father, Winnie needs to be free of the house. On the other hand, she is fearful that Harry's pleasure-seeking and carousing will overwhelm her. But still, a woman only gets a certain number of chances to escape. Walter shakes his head. He pleads with her.
"Nay, Winnie, not him, lass."
Winnie defies him. Quietly, but insistently, she says, "I love him."
"I'm telling you," says Walter, "you do as you like, but you'll never be happy if you marry that man."
Richard Stacey was reading From the Valley by Richard Benson. It was abridged and produced by Jill Waters and is a Waters Company production for BBC Radio 4. Now, the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Wednesday, the 30th of April. There are warnings of gales in Hebrides, Bailey and southeast Iceland. The general synopsis at 1800, low 250 miles west of Shannon, 998, expected just west of Rockall, 1001 by 1800 Wednesday. New low expected southern Sweden, 1001 by same time. New high expected just northeast of Iceland, 1031 by that time. The area forecast for the next 24 hours, Viking, north at Sira, northerly 5 to 7, fair, good. South at Sira, northerly or northwesterly 4 or 5, increasing 6 or 7, fair, good. 40s, Cromarty, easterly or northeasterly 5 or 6.